Yeah. All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. And it is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. We are going to be talking about weird recipes from the past. People in the 60s and 50s and 70s, cook some weird stuff. So we're going to get into that a little bit later on. And I'm going to give a little personality quiz to Dan and Esmeralda. And another edition of Pop-Up Video will be happening this morning. So that's what's happening on the show. 312-981-7200, talking tax, Triple Play Thursday request. And it is that time. Every couple of weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan talks to us about TV, and we welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good, 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 good. We got lots of TV to talk about, so...
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
I'm really curious about White Famous, which premieres on Showtime on Sunday. And it stars former SNL cast member Jay Farrow. And I'm really looking forward to it. I like Jay Farrow, and I'm looking at, you know, some of the cast members. And Stephen Tobolowsky, of course, is on it because he's on everything. So what did you think?
Where did you stand, first of all, on Californication during its almost endless run on Showtime?
I liked some of it. I didn't, because I don't think it should have been on as long as it was. It lost a lot of steam. So, but I mean, there were times that I enjoyed it. Yes.
White Famous comes from Tom Kapanos, who also created Californication, and there are a lot of similarities in terms of its approach to Hollywood, in terms of its kind of satirical bent, etc. Whereas with Californication, you could look, though, at the David Duchovny lead character and go, okay, that makes sense as kind of a proxy for this writer who's in his upper 40s, white writer in his 40s. Here, for some reason, his alter ego is a 30-something African-American stand-up comic who's trying to make it in Hollywood. And it's a strange combination, because I feel like a lot of the great recent Hollywood shows or shows about making it in the arts have tended to be these very personal things, and they don't tend to be necessarily about making it in Hollywood, but something like Better Things, where there is a here's someone going through life in Hollywood backdrop to it. It's this intensely personal story. Master of None is this intensely personal story. Even Atlanta, which isn't really in any way Donald Glover's personal story of making it in the entertainment business, it sort of has that still as a backdrop. It's very personal. This is not. It feels very distanced, and I was constantly being annoyed by the fact that they weren't really giving Jay Farrow's character enough to do, and that it's often not really his story at all. It's often about how uncomfortable this guy makes white people, and that's a weird prism through which to tell a story like this, and it bothered me a lot, actually, the more I've thought about it. I think that Jay Farrow is pretty good, and it does make you kind of appreciate how underused he was on SNL, where he was just, okay, let's bring him in, he'll do his Denzel impression, let's bring him in, he'll do his whatever impression. They very rarely let him actually show any range at all, and here he does that, and he shows that he's very capable, and there are some good people in the show. Stephen Tobolowsky's in one episode. Michael Rapaport's in an episode. They're supporting cast members who, you know, have popped up here and there everywhere. His son is played by the young actor who plays young Randall on This Is Us. So people who watch This Is Us will go, ooh, it's young Randall. Mm. But I didn't think it was great. I thought it had moments that were good and a lot of moments that fell a little flat, including a Bill Cosby joke in the pilot that I think is probably going to play really, really tone deaf in response to the week's coverage of horrible things coming out of Hollywood. I don't know. This is one where I didn't dislike it as I was watching it, and it has really kind of sat with me in a very sour way, and I don't know what to make of that.
Okay, that's White Famous. How many episodes have you seen in the whole series?
No, I've only seen two. Showtime put a third episode up after I'd already finished my review, and I just haven't felt any need to rush and watch it. I think I probably will watch a few more episodes just to kind of see how the tone goes. Jamie Foxx, who's an executive producer, is in the pilot and has a very, very, let's just say, broad cameo in the pilot. I don't want to say it's a hilarious cameo, but it's definitely out there. That's what I'll say about the Jamie Foxx cameo in the pilot.
Okay, all right. It's set on my DVR because I like a lot of the people involved, so I'm gonna give it a shot and see what happens.
It's worth a look.
Okay. Speaking of Sunday nights at 9 Central. HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm is back. I'm assuming you've seen the episodes.
I've seen the two episodes that have aired. How about you?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's lost a step. I laughed. I don't know if I needed to see him naked in a shower twice in the pilot. But I thought both episodes. I think both episodes were absolutely hilarious. And you know, I've noticed, I don't know if it's just me, but they're giving J.B. Smoove even more to do, which is, I think, a great thing. So I think it's hysterical. Where do you stand on it?
Well, I'm finding J.B. Smoove to be significantly funnier than Larry David at this point in the season. I feel like I'm starting off the show really negative today, so I hope we're going to get into some things I really like as we progress going forward.
Yeah.
The first two episodes, to me, felt like somebody trying really hard to write a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. They didn't really feel to me like Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes. They felt like they were trying way too hard to be, you know, crotchety and Curb Your Enthusiasm-y and not doing anything that felt, I don't know, as smooth and organic as the show is at its best. At its best, it's one of those shows where every episode is kind of an elegant short story where it builds, and then it reaches whatever the crescendo is, and you went, ha, I see how that all added together. And I don't know that I felt that way about either of the first two episodes. So I definitely laughed here and there, but I don't know. I'm waiting to fully get sucked back into the Curb Your Enthusiasm energy, and I hope it will happen.
Okay.
I'm not worried about the show or anything, but I did not love the first two episodes.
Oh, okay. Because I was on board. I laughed throughout the whole thing, and you know, every single shot for me of Larry David with that stupid wig and the mustache and the glasses, I laugh out loud every time I see him. So that cracked me up. But I also thought it was really interesting casting Nassim Pedrad as the woman who comes into the restaurant to kill him, considering that she's Iranian. And I just thought that was kind of interesting casting. So
I had not thought about that as being a thing, but yes, that does make sense. Well, lots of great people popping up here and there, you know, Oscar winner Jim Rash.
Yeah.
And I'm so unhappy and sad about fictional Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen separating that I really don't know if I can deal with it. Like, don't even do that to my emotions. I need those two to be happy and together. It's important to me, and you cannot toy with me by separating them.
Okay,
so there you go.
I'm with you. I can understand that. I did think that the I don't know. I mean, just like, for me, Larry David and Richard Lewis together, it's just fantastic. And the fact that they argued over what side of the restaurant, who walked the farthest to meet, I mean, that stuff it kills me. I think it's great.
I can buy that. It's, you know, it still is definitely a show with its perspective. It still does what it does better than, you know, anything that's imitated it subsequently. I'm just waiting for an episode which really hits home
with
me, but coming up in a few days.
Yeah, we got a few days. And are people watching it? I mean, I'm assuming that I would imagine the ratings are pretty good for it.
It seems to be doing okay. It's not huge, but it was never huge. It was never this massive smash hit for HBO or anything. And with HBO also, it's too early to know in the first 2 weeks how big the overall audience is. They measure everything out in live plus 30 day and live plus 6 months.
They just
want people to watch it.
Right. Is anybody watching The Deuce? Am I the only one watching The Deuce?
Enough people that they renewed it.
Oh, they did. Oh, they did renew it.
Yes, it has been renewed, and short term, that's all that I care about. I would like for more people to watch it, and I don't know that I've seen what the episode count is going to be for the second season, but it has been renewed, and that is, for me, the one and only important thing is bring back the shows I like, because I don't want to be unhappy.
I understand. Well, I'm glad to hear that news. I didn't know it got renewed, and that makes me very happy as well, because I think the show's terrific. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we talk TV every couple of weeks. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll take a break for the news and then more TV talk right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday, 1 hour, 3 songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Skip Skipley and the Jet are on the way. We're going to do another pop-up video. And we're going to talk about weird recipes and all kinds of other cool stuff here on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
All right. Let's. I have not seen it, but I know a lot of people are interested and have watched it. The new X-Men spinoff called The Gifted, which is on Fox. How's that working out?
X-Men affiliated, or it's hard to know how exactly to describe its relationship to X-Men. At least they're not denying that the X-Men exist, which is some importance on a show like this. And there are a couple of characters on the show who have either been in movies before or are comic favorite characters, etc. And it's created by Matt Nix, who did Burn Notice, and the first episode was directed by Bryan Singer, who is, of course, Bryan Singer, and the second episode directed by Len Wiseman, and it's basically a story of a family where the two kids discover they have mutant powers, and they have to go on the run, and they become involved in the mutant underground and stuff, and it's got some very good actors in it. Everyone in the genre television community loves Amy Acker, and she's terrific. Stephen Moyer, other than his inability to do American accents from True Blood and Shots Fired, he's very good. There are a number of familiar supporting characters, including Emma DuBont, who was one of my favorite characters on Bunheads. It's a good, solid cast, and the first two episodes have been, I would say, decent and fun. They've been relatively high production values, relatively good special effects. Some of the actors are good. The relationships between most of the characters are pretty solid. It doesn't blow you away or anything, but compared to something like ABC's Marvel Inhumans, it just mostly looks competent, and that's something that's important and something that Inhumans can't rise to the level of doing. So it's decent. And Garrett Dillahunt, who's an actor who I love in absolutely everything, he made his first appearance in the end of the second episode, and he's going to be more important going forward. And basically having Garrett Dillahunt on anything puts a high likelihood that I'm going to be watching that show. And so I'm very glad to have him there. And I think the show has potential, and it's only a short season order. I think it's either 10 or 12 episodes that Fox ordered it for. And so I think it could be contained enough that it could be successful. That's my hope, at least.
Okay. All right. I agree with you about Garrett Dillahunt. I think he's phenomenal. I like him. I love him in everything.
He is one of the best. He never phones it in. Sometimes he's in things that are awful, but he's always good.
Okay. I've watched both episodes of Ghosted. Because obviously Adam Scott and Craig Robinson, I will watch anything that they do. And I like the second episode more than the pilot. But I found the pilot to be pleasant. I wanted to laugh more. So I mean, I still hope it gets better, because I thought the second episode was better than the first episode, and I think I like it, and I'm going to continue watching it. And I know that you kind of felt the same way about the pilot.
Pretty much. And then the second episode, I don't know that I thought it was better. So I think I might have found it less. I didn't find it funnier or less funny, but I think I might have found it less pleasant. I thought it kind of didn't exactly nail the horror humor tone that they're so clearly going for, a tone in which it actually does take the horror slash sci-fi element seriously. And
yeah.
so they want things to be a little bit gross and things to be a little bit scary. And it's a tough thing to find that tone. And I thought the second episode didn't really get it. Mostly I'm just waiting for it to be as good as its two leading men,
yeah.
because Craig Robinson and Adam Scott should be fantastic. And they're good together. I'm just waiting for them to be great together, and I'll, you know, they're good enough together that I can watch them for a few more weeks trying to get things right.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful, but I don't think it's anywhere near there yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I totally agree with you. I don't think it's as good as its leads. There's no question about it, but you know, it's kind of breezy and it goes by, you know, and I've chuckled.
Oh, it goes by very fast.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing when you blend genres in this way is when you can put as much plot as they try to into a 21-minute comedy. It's over almost as soon as it begins, and that can be either a good thing or a bad thing because it doesn't give you enough time to actually let characters breathe and be funny.
Yeah.
So it's possible they could stand to slow things down a tiny bit and put in a few more jokes.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see what happens with that one. Now, you reviewed, you wrote about that and The Mayor in the same piece, I have not watched The Mayor yet. It's on my DVR, but I haven't watched it yet. Tell everybody about The Mayor.
And The Mayor, they're very similar shows in terms of what they do well and what they don't do well. The Mayor is on ABC. It's on Tuesday nights, and it's about a low-level Bay Area rapper who enters the local mayoral race, basically hoping to get the publicity that comes from being in the mayoral race. And then he, spoiler alert, given the title of the show, he wins and he has to figure out how to govern, as it were. And the second episode, the first episode was based a lot on the election. The second episode was based a lot on the main character played by Brandon Michael Hall, learning about budgets and learning about his town's governmental procedure and attempting to protect a music program. And it's a show that is so totally likable and easygoing that you can at least short term ignore the fact that, unfortunately, it's really not very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely likable. Yvette Nicole Brown from Community, I would say, is by a pretty wide margin the funniest part of the show, and she plays the main character's mother, and I think she's really good. It's just not hitting on all comedic cylinders, but it goes by fast, it goes down easy, and I think it's the kind of show where it has the potential to, if it chooses to, have things to say. So this episode this week really did kind of want to talk about the importance of arts education, and particularly the importance of arts education in inner city areas. And so I can get behind that. I can say, okay, let's do a show that wants to talk about things like that. And I'll watch it for also a while, giving it a chance to get actually genuinely funny.
Yeah.
think it has worlds of potential, but for now it's not funny, but it's not in any way unpleasant to watch.
Okay. That does sound a lot like Ghosted, the way you described it.
And the thing is, if there were actually new comedies this season that had arrived fully formed and hilarious, I would say, okay, don't be patient with these. Watch the funnier shows. But these are by far the two best comedies of at least the fall, because if you look at the other comedies on other networks and whatnot, they're mostly pretty horrible.
Yeah.
So I can give things time. I'm a pretty generous reviewer when it comes to giving things time to find themselves, and those two shows I will definitely do that for.
Right. Okay. Speaking of new shows that aren't funny, I gave up on Me, Myself, and I already. You know, and I'm so disappointed because I was just rooting for it. You know, Larroquette, Moynihan, and it's a mess.
You know, if you've got a couple good actors and kind of the bones of a good idea, that's just not enough, unfortunately. Not in this TV landscape where there actually are plenty of good shows to watch. I can't stick with a show like that if it gives no indication that it's finding itself. I watched the second episode this week of 9JKL again because I am prepared to give shows a couple episodes, but it was horrible again, and I don't need to watch a third. There are too many good shows to stick with truly bad shows for more than an episode or two. I think that me, myself, and Irene, I'm just going to keep doing that.
You have a 16-year-old Farrelly Brothers movie on your mind.
Ridiculous that I really remember absolutely nothing about except that he had split personality disorders and they were both in love with Renee Zellweger. Is
right.
That the plot of it was?
I think so, yeah.
I've only seen it the one time, Dan. It was like 16 years ago. So
yeah, me too. No, he was a Rhode Island cop, I think.
Yeah, he was.
It all sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Anyway, me, myself, and I think it's better than 9JKL. I think it actually does have kind of aspirations to it, whereas 9JKL is just a broad, abrasive, multi-cam comedy that happens to have some really, really great actors trapped in it. But I'm not going to, you know. Free Elliot Gould, free Linda Lavin,
yeah.
free David Walton, free Lisa Lapera. Give all these people new shows.
Yeah.
I don't need to keep watching.
I remember your initial review of it, and I, you know, as a fan of Elliot Gould and a huge fan of Linda Lavin, I was like, I'll give it a shot. I literally 10 minutes into the first episode, and I was like, no.
Well, if you made it 10 minutes in, that means you managed to make it through multiple jokes involving Elliot Gould's testicular area, several jokes involving Mark Feuerstein and Linda Lavin's genitals.
Yep.
Genital jokes aplenty.
Yep.
So You got a good taste for that show in those 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about a couple of Netflix things that are really good, okay?
Excellent.
Okay, good. We'll take a quick break here. Dan, hang on. And Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more TV. It's Nick DiGilio here. And by the way, you can follow Dan on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Okay, take a break. More after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. 720 WGN. How are you? Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're going to have another pop-up video coming up a little bit later on. We're going to talk about weird recipes, and I'm going to give a little personality quiz to Esmeralda and Dan. That's all coming up, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we always talk TV with Dan, and we'll welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, a couple of things that are on Netflix that I would like to talk about. Well, there's a million things on Netflix.
But you don't want to talk about all of them, because, again, then we'd be talking about Jeffy, and no one needs that.
Okay. I loved American Vandal so much. I thought it was unbelievably funny. Tell everybody about American Vandal, and where did it come from?
It came from out of nowhere, and it's best that it comes from out of nowhere. No, it came from, I guess it's technically produced by Funny or Die, and the creators are Dan Peralta and Tony Yacenda, and they have basically shorts as their credits. They have online stuff. There was no reason to think that they could take a one-joke true crime mockumentary premise and string it out over 8 relatively long episodes. These aren't even like 22-minute comedy episodes. These are 30-plus-minute episodes.
Right, right.
And it's the story of the aftermath of a mass vandalization of the teacher's parking lot at a Southern California high school. As Wikipedia puts it, 27 faculty cars were vandalized with, quote, phallic images.
Right.
So, indeed. And, yeah, so the two AV Club kids begin to suspect that the person who was accused of the crime is not, in fact, guilty, and they set out to find other suspects, to reenact and retrace the crime, and basically to get closer to the truth.
Yeah.
And it's really a surprisingly effective show. By the end of the 8 episodes, I also found myself caring about who the actual perpetrator was, and I found myself caring about the relationships between the characters, and that there were a lot of reasonably good performances, and the cast is variably known actors. Several of them are YouTube and other online video sensations. A couple of them are young actors who you may have seen if you watched, Red Band Society on Fox. One of the actors is from Red Band Society on Fox. One of the main actors is Jimmy Tatro, who's well known on YouTube and also appeared in 22 Jump Street. You know, you've seen a couple of these people before fleetingly, but for the most part, the show works best if you don't know most of the cast. And I feel like most viewers coming in are only going to know a couple of the people in the cast, and that helps. And it's just a really good show.
Yeah, and it's really funny. I mean, really funny, consistently. And everything that you said about how as it goes along, you do get sucked into the story. And they really nail the style and the tone, you know, to the point where if the subject matter weren't so incredibly, you know, ridiculous, that people might be fooled into thinking that it's real. And that's how well they do it.
They treat it utterly straightforwardly. They don't try to treat it as a funny thing that they're trying to get to the bottom of this
right.
case. They
right.
treat it as being this serious thing where a kid got expelled from school from this, and they're trying to get to the bottom of it.
Right.
And they don't treat it as a parody. And I think not enough people are talking about the fact that it's way too high tech to have been done by this high
yeah.
school
yeah, yeah,
AV
yeah.
club.
Yeah,
and
well, that's true.
There's too much darn polish, and that's people should be complaining about that because it's so accurate in so many other different ways, like the way it handles social media and the way it handles the way kids today and also young adults and grown-ups live their lives in such public ways that we leave these breadcrumbs, we leave these traces of ourselves, photo, video, digital location, etc., you know, everywhere we go. And I think it's very, very smart about those things and how we basically tell the stories of our own lives in public these
yeah.
days. No
yeah.
one is keeping anything hidden.
Right.
And I think it's smart, and I think it's funny, and I think occasionally it's also sweet and emotional in ways that surprised me.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think it's great. It's American Vandal, and I highly recommend it. It's really great. Now, another Netflix thing. tell everybody about Nick Kroll's Big Mouth.
Nick Kroll, as someone the other day at work asked me, they said it sounds like it's a lot of animated boners. Which I responded, yes, that would be an accurate description of this show. And if you're not into animated boners, yeah. I can't recommend it. It's basically based on Nick Kroll and Andrew Goldberg, two of the creators. It's based on their teenage years, growing up in, you know, the suburbs of New York City. And it's about a group of junior high school kids all either going through puberty or on the brink of puberty. And it's animated. I don't know if I mentioned that,
yeah.
but animated boners and all. and it's both wildly immature and also incredibly smart and introspective about the humiliations and embarrassments of those years of a kid's life.
Yeah.
And it works surprisingly well. And like American Vandal, it gets better as it goes along, and like American Vandal, it gets deeper as it goes along.
Yes.
So the characters who seem like they're immature and dumb and awful, they're all much more interesting than that as you go through it.
Yeah, I agree, and there's a reason why I wanted to bring them both up together, because they're similar in that regard, but also they're both really funny shows on Netflix, and I thought Big Mouth was great. I'm a big fan of Nick Kroll anyway. I think he's great, and I, you know, I think it's very, very funny. So
I am really hit and miss, or Nick Kroll rather is hit and miss for me. Yeah. But I thought this was really good. That almost every episode has a parody song in it.
Yeah.
And the songs are all just pitch perfect
yeah.
parodies, and it's just great songs and great emulations of different styles. The vocal cast is ridiculously good. Nick Kroll and John Mulaney are the two main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Mantzoukas, you know, Jenny Slate, Fred Armisen, Maya Rudolph, Jordan Peele voices the ghost of Duke Ellington,
right.
regular character on the show. You know, then you've got just all these people just popping up at random. Richard Kind, because you can't have a Jewish kid whose father isn't played by Richard Kind. You can't have a gay child child character who isn't voiced by Andrew Rannells. You know, it's just, it's a really great cast.
Yeah.
And I was just surprised at how sensitively it handled a lot of stuff that could be somewhere between gross, unsettling, weird, perverse. It handles all of it in a way that's both sweet and honoring of the biological process behind it all.
Yeah, I agree. That's called Big Mouth, and American Vandal and Big Mouth, both available on Netflix, both very funny. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we got more TV to talk about. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we shall return. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. You can follow us on Facebook, which is the best way to stay connected, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And coming up a little bit, we're going to talk about weird recipes from the past. I can't believe people used to eat this stuff. We'll talk about that. We got a pop-up video, Skip's on his way, and a little personality quiz for Esmeralda and Dan that I'm going to give them. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And Dan Feinberg joins us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we talk TV every couple of weeks with Dan, and we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Before the break and the news, we were talking about a show called Big Mouth, which is animated, and you were singing the praises of the voice work on that show. And you contributed to IndieWire to connect with that. Favorite animated voice actors. And you, again, gave 15,000.
Did I only get 15,000 answers? And that was one where part of the problem was that I was worried that a lot of the classic voiceover people were not going to get named, and so, you know, at the risk that someone wasn't going to name Mel Blanc or something, I had to make sure that he didn't go unnamed. And so there were a lot of different people, and then I feel like in the actual article itself, you know, there ended up being a lot of sort of familiar people, and then some people naming folks like celebrating Jessica Biel for her work in the most recent season of BoJack Horseman, as one could do. But I wanted to concentrate my own answers largely on sort of the Mel Blancs, the Dawes Butlers, the Bill Scotts. Who else? I think my final answer was Don Messick.
Yeah.
The original Scooby-Doo.
The original Scooby-Doo. And of course, you mentioned June Foray, who we lost recently.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, those are great voice. You know, because here's the thing, Dan, as you know, the voice work that has been done in animation, that's actually an art form. A lot of people don't really know that. Now it doesn't exist as much anymore because they simply get a celebrity to do it. And I've had a very angry Billy West on my show many times to talk about just that, like how much work that these voice artists really do and how important it is. And now it's just every animated feature, it just has, you know, celebrities in it. And some celebrities do pretty good voice work, some don't. But there was a real art form to it. And I was glad to see that you mentioned those guys, those classic voice artists from the past.
It's the kind of thing I like to do. I mean, it's definitely the DreamWorks animationization of voice work, where you're just like, okay, let's get the biggest names we can, and then we'll put them there, and it doesn't matter if they have distinctive voices. And, you know, I think there are definitely plenty of great old-school voiceover people out there who are still big names. You know, Hank Azaria is a big name, and he's also a tremendously talented voiceover artist.
Right. I mean, if you look at like everybody on The Simpsons, you know, the main people on The Simpsons, they're all amazing. And Harry Shearer is another one who is just incredible.
Dan Castellaneta, of course, also great. Yeardley Smith, Julie Kavner, all of them. They're all really great. Among the 50 people I listed, I listed several people who aren't like, who don't have varied voices, but who do different things with their voices. Like Will Arnett he sounds like Will Arnett no matter what he does, but his vocal performance in BoJack Horseman is spectacular.
It is.
It's just one voice. So
yeah.
You think, okay, whatever. Or Kristen Schaal, she has just a very funny voice. And it doesn't vary that much from character to character when she pops up in different things. On the other hand, she does a lot of things with it, and that's a skill too, I think.
Yeah, so. I agree. I agree with you on both of those counts. I mean, if you listen to the work that he does on BoJack Horseman, Will Arnett, I mean, obviously it's great, and you can always tell it's Will Arnett because Will Arnett has that kind of voice. But you compare it to what he does in the Batman Lego movies, and the Batman Lego stuff is hilarious, and it's different. It's still the same guy. But it's different, and that's a talent. So,
yeah, that was. I'm trying to think of that. I give like 15 or 20 answers every week in
right.
these, and it's you know it's the only way I know how to do it. I don't like to leave things out. I like to make sure things get honored. It's generational. It's everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that makes. I was really happy to see the old school voiceover artists get some recognition, and I'm sure that the very angry Billy West, if he read the article, would feel the same way.
Though I didn't include the very angry Billy West, certainly I could have.
Yeah. No, it's just very interesting to have, you know, because I've had him on the show several times, because for me, you know, one of the greatest things that's ever been created in any art form is Ren and Stimpy, and so I've had Billy West and I've had John Kay on, both very angry guys and very weird guys in different ways. Have you ever interviewed those guys?
I haven't interviewed them in particular, but I've interviewed some of the more animation, the genuine animation voice guys. And yes, it's the easiest thing in the world to do, to ask them about something like the DreamWorks Sinbad movie,
right.
or Shark Tale.
That Shark Tale is the one. Shark Tale is the one that sets off Billy West every time.
For sure, and all of them, because these are just like these wonderful examples of how horrible that approach to animation is, where it's just like, okay, let's get a shark and Will Smith will voice him and whatever.
Yeah. And sometimes though, when they hire celebrities, they do great work. Like Kubo and the Two Strings, I thought Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey were both terrific, and they're obviously huge names, but I thought they both did a wonderful job in that movie.
So. I think if you look, you can point to sort of the individual, you can point and you can easily see the great big name voice work, but still you go, so Ellen DeGeneres is a big name, whatever, but among kids, Albert Brooks is not a huge name, but Albert Brooks is so great in Finding Nemo,
right.
And so that's kind of the great example of saying, okay, here's a person who clearly is a big name and clearly is a big star, but is not a big star with our target demo,
right.
And really isn't getting anyone to watch the movie in addition, but it's the right voice.
Yeah, I can't imagine an 8-year-old going, I really love Albert Brooks. I can't wait to see Finding Nemo.
Exactly. And so, but you cast him and you go, okay, there's someone who actually gives a fantastic vocal performance and still is a big star, but he's not giving the performance because he's a big star.
Right.
And that's the right way to do it, as opposed to the let's get Brad Pitt to randomly voice someone because he's Brad Pitt.
Exactly. Okay, the second season of The Good Place. Oh, I love it. I just love that show, and I love where it went and where it's going, and everybody on it is so funny. You mentioned, you know, Ted Danson earlier. God, he's so good on this show. And the twist that they did, you know, and starting off this at the end of last season, starting off this season, going down that route, it's a show that I think gets better. I love it. I absolutely love it. Where are you on this season?
Oh, very positive. I thought the first two episodes were good, and then I thought the third and fourth episodes were both truly great. And I was the work they're putting into that show. And the first season, when it was more kind of traditionally plot driven, the work they put into making sure that each episode included an actual discussion of philosophy and ethics, and that they found a way to weave that in, but that was positively straightforward and traditional compared to what they're doing this season.
I know, man.
This season is just, it's spinning wildly in circles, and, you know, episodes go nowhere going forward, and yet take hundreds of days. It's, you know, without spoiling anything, the show has become this amazing conceptual feat, and I'm tremendously impressed with what they're doing.
I agree with you 100%. And I just, so, you know, it's just exhilarating to watch sometimes where they go with it, you know, where they just jump ahead in time like a million times and then they go back. And it's just very, very funny. And everybody in the cast gets to shine. And I love it. And I got to say, you know, I think bringing Tina Fey into Great News was a good move. I still don't think it's a great show by any stretch of the imagination, but it has improved, obviously, by bringing her.
Okay, you're feeling even that positive, because you were really down even, I think, on the season premiere.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's better. It's better than it's gotten better. I think it was I think a move of desperation to bring Tina Fey in, but she's funny on it, you know, because she's Tina Fey and she adds a great presence to it. And I think it's improved. I still don't think it's a good show, a really great show, but I think it's improved.
It's just so erratic, yeah. And I think that was the case, honestly, in the first season as well. There were episodes that I thought were great episodes, and then there were episodes I thought were total duds, but most of the episodes just swung wildly back and forth between things that are entirely unfunny and then things that are funny and characters who are inconsistent from episode to episode, and then things that are just but it makes me laugh, and I think that's enough. We've already discussed several shows that we both find likable and enjoyable and that aren't necessarily funny, and I do think that Great News makes me laugh every week, probably more than a lot of shows that I think are technically quote-unquote better shows, but they like nail a good punchline or two on Great News, and I'm like, okay, I can appreciate that even if I'm not appreciating the other 20 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, it also helps with the cast that they have in there. I mean, if you know, Andrea Martin is a national treasure, you know, and so you're bound to get laughs out of, you know, when you put Andrea Martin in something, you're going to laugh. That's just a guarantee.
And so, yet I find that they misuse or underutilize her probably more than anyone else on the show. There are things that they make her do where I'm like, wow, they have to do something better with Andrea Martin if they have Andrea Martin. And I feel more frequently sorry for what they make her do than anyone else in the cast.
Well,
so,
yeah, and yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you. But I also think that if you want to see Andrea Martin, I know you're not a fan of Difficult People, but she's unbelievably funny on Difficult People. That's the show where she really is used. I think she's used better on that show than she is in Great News. But she's really funny on Difficult People.
I do not doubt that you are correct. And yet. Yeah,
I know. Okay, SNL, we're two episodes in. I thought the first episode with Ryan Gosling was funny, and obviously so did Ryan Gosling. And I thought last week's was a disaster. I thought the Gal Gadot episode was a disaster. And I agree with you. I saw that the Baldwin's Trump seems to have run out of juice, and I agree with you. And that was apparent from the cold open 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I really don't need if they don't have anything that they want to do with him, I don't need them to keep bringing him back. And the first episode was not very good, but it had good moments in it. The second episode was bad. I don't blame Gal Gadot at all for it, because it was one of those things where they have no confidence at all in writing for certain attractive actresses.
Yeah.
And so they fall back on the exact same, oh, look, it's a wildly gorgeous woman walking in slow motion into a scene.
Yep.
And it's the laziest thing that they do.
Yeah.
Of all of the traps that they fall into every single year, it doesn't matter who the writers are, it's the laziest one, and she just fell right into it.
Yep.
And I don't have a clue if she's funny or not.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. They did it. They did it with Margot Robbie too. Same thing. Same jokes over and over again. I'm hoping that some of the new cast members get to stand out a little bit. Chris Redd is very, very funny, and I'm glad that he got the gig. And he was pretty funny on that episode or the scene that they did, the sketch they did with the Pizza Hut pasta, which I thought was very funny. I thought that whole sketch was very, very funny.
That was definitely one of the highlights of that episode. And no, I think he's good. For some people, he's slightly higher profile than most of the new faces who they bring in on the show.
Yeah,
in that I've seen him many different places before.
Yeah.
So I know what he can do, and so far they haven't used it. The other guy, I don't even know that I've noticed him. There's another guy.
Yeah.
His new, and I can't think if I can remember anything he's done. And then there's Heidi Gardner.
Yeah.
And she's been in a couple things, and she seems to be fine, but has not had the chance to do anything.
Well, we're only two episodes in, and the featured players really don't get, you know, much in that first season, so we'll see.
Mikey Day and Alex Moffat did a lot.
Yeah, they did. Mikey Day was all over the place, which made me nuts. That's because he was on that terrible Martin Short and Maya Rudolph thing, and he's been a writer.
But he had also been a writer on the show for a somewhat long time, so they knew him. He was a known cat. He was a known quantity, and he knew how to write for himself immediately, which a lot of these people do. And Alex Moffat, they've used him a lot, and I think he's very good. And basically, they both came in at a moment in which the show had jettisoned a few of its sort of conventional good-looking white guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just stepped right in.
They did.
And that gave them more to do, whereas Melissa Villaseñor, they still can't find anything for her to do, and that's annoying.
It is, because she's good. Dan, always a pleasure, and everybody can read you, The Hollywood Reporter, and follow you on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, Nick.
All right, take care, buddy. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody, talking TV. We're going to take a quick break here on WGN. When we come back, we're going to talk about really weird recipes from the past. We'll get into that. That's coming up.